Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. For this week's program, I'd like to talk again about Israel, her troubles, and in essence, God's plan for this entire world. This last month in Israel, there have been major protests by the political left, shutting down the whole country. Understanding this is quite complicated, so let me just read through a headline paragraph and then discuss what's really happening. Quote, Monday, March 27th, was supposed to be a red-letter day for the new far-right Israeli coalition government when it planned to slide through the Knesset the central provision of its judicial overhaul bill. Comfortably ahead of the Passover recess beginning on April 2nd, instead, it ended up being one of the most extraordinary days in Israel's history. Spurred by the firing of the defense minister, by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu the evening before, the demonstrations against the overhaul, which had been building in intensity for over 2 months, became overwhelming. Universities, businesses, the airport, the Israeli embassies, and consulates abroad were all closed down in protest, and a general strike was scheduled for the following day. Air Force Reserve pilots and other security personnel, on whom the military heavily relies, were threatening not to report for training or duty. In the face of this completely unprecedented protest, Netanyahu announced that he would suspend the bill's progress to try to reach a broad agreement during the next Knesset session, which begins on May the 1st. So, by the way, the reason Netanyahu fired the defense minister was because the minister claimed to be supportive of the bill, which would overhaul the power of the Israeli Supreme Court, but then he went on a political campaign against it, which is not something a cabinet member is supposed to do to an administration. Now, since the writing of those headlines under pressure from the United States, Netanyahu has reinstated the defense minister. So what's going on here? Well, right now, the conservatives are in the majority in the Israeli government. The prime minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, is a conservative. The Knesset, the Israeli Congress, is controlled by the conservatives. But like the United States, the courts in Israel, the judges, are mostly secular intellectual liberals. And just like the United States, the political left in Israel has used the judicial system, the courts, to force on the public leftist values, abortion, LGBTQ, socialism. In Israel, there's no Bill of Rights. And so the courts even have more power than in the United States. The left in Israel, like in the United States, has learned that if you cannot win in the court of public opinion, if you can't get abortion and LGBTQ passed through the vote of the people, you can use the courts to get your policies and your values enforced on the nation. So Netanyahu and the conservatives passed the law to limit the power of the courts in Israel, giving the legislature, the Knesset, the power to veto court decisions, since the courts are not answerable to the people. And when this law was passed, the left, in response, began rioting and shutting down the country. Guess which side the Biden administration is on? Of course, the Biden administration is siding with the leftist court Jews, which they're called, the court Jews. This public disruption and shutdown has now become a new tactic of the left. If you can't win in any branch of government, then simply make a big noise and cause trouble. Because one thing politicians hate more than anything else is an uprising. The squeaky wheel gets the oil. The one who can make the biggest threat wins. You know, this is the Micah chapter 2, verse 1 principle, where in an ungodly nation, might makes right. It's not about principle, it's about power. Maybe the Israeli left is getting the example from America, BLM and Antifa. And I guarantee you, if America ever gets again a conservative Republican president and a conservative majority in Congress, we will see the left take to the streets, claiming this is not our government. They have now such a disregard for the law. If they lose in the legislature or in the courts or in the White House, they will be a belligerent majority, and we can read this on their signs. No justice, no peace. Now, we've heard in the news that they have the unions in Israel backing the protests and calling for a national strike. Because along with the immoral agenda of the courts in Israel, there has also been an agenda of economic lawlessness, a socialist agenda, where the courts are both leftist morally and economically. And these things usually go together. Now, these unions are public sector unions that work to force the government to keep them hired and paid well at the expense of everyone else. The problem with this is that this is like a wage price fix for some, which is not tied to economic reality. Now, recognize that this bill Netanyahu passed changed no law concerning the unions or union policy. But the unions were afraid that if the Knesset could veto court decisions, that someday down the road, this might adversely affect union policy because the courts have historically favored the unions. The courts are in the union's back pocket. And the courts have been used by the unions to skirt the will of the rest of the non-union public who resent union largesse. And this is identical to the left in America protesting the selection of conservative judges on the Supreme Court. Because the left knows that if the justices are conservative, this will thwart what they've been able to do for the last 40 years, use the courts to push their agenda. If they don't have the courts, they're going to have to pass laws through legislators. And that's difficult to do because legislators tend to represent a larger swath of the American public, which tends to be more conservative. Well, the same is true in Israel. As we see in the majority vote in Israel, they elected a conservative prime minister and a conservative Knesset. So this is the intellectual secular elites in Israel versus the general public. In these protests, the universities also went on strike and refused to hold classes. Now, in reading articles about these protests in Israel, what's interesting is the sloganeering coming from the Israeli left. The left is claiming that they're defending democracy and Netanyahu is a fascist extremist, when in fact, it's the left that is opposing the rule by those elected in the Knesset, democratically. The left wants to be governed by the unelected courts and government bureaucracy. So who are the true fascists? But it's always about winning by sloganeering and accusing your opponent of what you are actually doing. Well, the same thing is happening in America. Have you noticed that the rhetoric now coming from the Democrat Party is that they're the ones defending democracy? They couldn't have said that before when the general public was more conservative, but now that the left believes they have the majority on board concerning their social agenda, more people are supporting abortion and LGBTQ rights and socialism, now they're claiming they're defending democracy, and that the Republicans are the radical minority. Well, in order to maintain peace, Netanyahu temporarily withdrew the legislation limiting the courts. I mean, it's a tough call. On the one hand, you don't want to be like King Zedekiah, who wouldn't listen to the prophet Jeremiah to do the right thing, but instead he listened to his elders who insisted on keeping up the fight against Nebuchadnezzar. But on the other hand, you don't want to be like King Rehoboam, who refused to listen to the elders. And by this, Rehoboam split the nation into two. The hardliners in the Knesset were urging the prime minister to fight on, to call the bluff of the left. After all, they were the duly elected legislature. National security minister said, "We must not halt the reforms in the judicial system, and we must not give in to anarchy." But Netanyahu gave in, and his reasoning is we need to avoid a rift in our people. We need to avoid a civil war. He noted that the Israeli society is on a dangerous collision course. So what's the lesson here? What are the righteous to do when the ungodly Marxist left reaches a critical mass in the country where they will not submit to the values and the morals based upon the transcendent law of God, but insist on following what gives them power and moral license? And what do the righteous do when every institution and every group in a country becomes ungodly, or where there's at least a powerful radical minority, a 49% minority? Jeremiah chapter 5, verse 30. "An appalling and a horrible thing has happened in the land. The prophets prophesy falsely, the priests rule by their own authority, and my people love it so. But what will you do at the end of it?" Or Psalm chapter 11, verse 3. "If the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do?" Well, the answer is, of course, to continue to preach and pray and teach and live a righteous life. In the words of Keith Green, you just keep doing your best and pray that it's blessed, and he'll take care of the rest. The situation that is currently taking place in Israel, it's just a great reminder of what constantly has happened throughout Israel's history. Remember in 900 BC, Israel split between northern and southern Israel. The larger 10 northern tribes became the secular left, following Baal worship. The southern, the smaller two tribes, became the religious conservatives. Because the program of God was never popular enough with the people to function for the larger population. Those who followed the law of Moses, even incompletely, were always in the minority. As southern Israel continued, the righteous became an even smaller minority in southern Israel. Isaiah 10, Romans chapter 9, "For though your people, O Israel, may be like the sand of the sea, only a remnant will be saved. A destruction is determined, overflowing with righteousness." Only a remnant will be saved. This is all summed up in Jesus' teaching in Matthew chapter 7, the Sermon on the Mount. "Enter through the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is broad that leads to destruction. And there are many who enter through it, for the gate is small and the way is narrow that leads to life, and there are few who find it." Before we discuss the spiritual lesson further, there's one more news item I want to share that's kind of related to these protests. Last week, the Israeli police raided the Al-Aqsa Mosque and arrested Muslims who are barricading themselves in the mosque. The Palestinians later responded by firing rockets from Gaza and Syria into Israel, and Israel responded with airstrikes. The Al-Aqsa Mosque is the Dome of the Rock Mosque that in the providence of God sits on the Jewish Temple Mount, preventing the Jews from rebuilding the temple. Now, according to earlier agreements between Jordan and Israel, Muslims are not allowed to camp in the mosque. And there are a number of security reasons for this. But what happens each year at this time, you know, during either Ramadan or the Passover, Muslims try to break the rules in order to protest the Jewish state. And often even some far-right Jews will enter into the Muslim-occupied temple area to protest the Muslim occupation there. Well, this year, the Muslim protests increased, and I believe in part it was due to the left's rioting last month, because the left in Israel was sending a clear message to the Muslim Palestinians that you can get what you want if you riot enough. So back to the spiritual lesson here. Israel has enemies both within and without. So how can Israel survive? It's a country that has always been in a state of moral, spiritual, religious conflict. And it's also a picture of the United States and really every other country in the world. It's the battle between two worldviews, God versus humanism. There are two very good recent articles in this regard by David Solway, a conservative Canadian author. You know, he's so theologically grounded in his writing that he has to be working off of a Christian worldview. He's written before about how the left denies original sin, how the left is just a revival of Gnosticism. The first article, entitled "The Scourge of Jewish Self-Division, The Court Jews Are Busy at Work." And this is about how the leftists are at work in Israel and how they've always been at work in Israel. Her enemies have always been from within. Quote, "Brother against brother, prophet against backslidden people, idolatrous kings and priests against these very prophets, and even nation against nation, form an indelible part of the Jewish chronicle. The history of two kingdoms provides a continual relevant object lesson. After the death of King Solomon, the Israelite community broke apart into two warring monarchies of Israel and Judah. The shedding of kinship blood critically weakened the two kingdoms, leading to the conquest of Israel by the Assyrians and the reduction of Judah first by the Chaldeans, then by the Egyptians, and finally by the Babylonians. We see the sorry spectacle of division acting itself out today in the violent civil protests against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's efforts to reform a hardcore, self-appointed leftist Supreme Court, which regularly thwarts the will of the legitimate right-wing government. It was on this platform that Netanyahu was elected by a massive majority of the vote. But the left is good at civil disruption. There have been resignations and firings and dissenting members of the government and raging animosity against the prime minister for his perceived temerity in trying to overhaul the judicial system and redress a long festering political sore. The left is having none of it. Netanyahu's critics argue that the plan is pushing Israel down a path of autocracy, a path they themselves appear to be treading. David Solway then goes on to write about those Jews today and throughout all the history of Israel who didn't believe in the program of God, like the spies who brought back the bad report, the rebels against Moses. And he writes that the Jews of all people should not be fighting one another given the enemies that God has put around them. And really, that's why God has put the Jews in such a dangerous part of the world. The land bridge between three continents with so many people jealous for their land. Because it would help the Jews realize that they need to live close to God and live righteously. They needed the power of God. But even then, the rebellion against God in the heart of natural unsaved man cannot be contained, no matter what the threat. And as the prophets of Israel spoke, the nation is ultimately destroyed by the sin and rebellion of the people. Abraham Lincoln said about America this, quote, "At what point, then, is the approach of danger to be expected? I answer, if it ever reaches us, it must spring up amongst us. It cannot come from abroad. If destruction be our lot, we ourselves will be its author and finisher. As a nation of freemen, we must live through all time or die by suicide. Solway also had another article entitled, Can Israel Survive? This is a long read, but when someone says something, well, it's worth listening to him rather than to me. Quote, it's never been easy for Israel. The understatement of the century, from the moment of its establishment in 1948, when it was invaded by five Arab armies to the present day, when it's facing multiple threats to its very survival, it suffers a history like no other nation in the world, surrounded by enemies, fighting wars on every front, infiltrated by terrorists, confronting the dreams of genocidal regimes, in particular the prospects of a nuclear Iran sworn to Israel's annihilation. And Israel is subject to an international delegitimization campaign carried out via the United Nations, the World Council of Churches, spurious NGOs and so-called peace organizations, labor unions, university campuses, and a hostile European Union. As if this were not enough, there is yet another menace it has to face. Deriving from the Cain and Abel paradigm, which has inwardly corroded the Jewish community since the thunderous instance it received the tablets on Mount Sinai, betrayal from within. The rebellion of Korah, Dathan, Abiram against Moses, and his mission to create a unified and cohesive people set the tone for much of what followed in the history of the Jews. The record is inexhaustible. The backsliding tribes and their idolatrous rulers, whom the prophets railed against, the conflict between the brother states of Israel and Judah, the quarreling Jews Josephus tells us about, who were in considerable measure responsible for the Roman victory and the massacre in the first century AD, the apostate, wicked sons, the court Jews, who have proliferated throughout the ages. The renegades, the turncoats, did and continue to do immeasurable harm to Israel. The motive for treachery seems to be immemorial. For every Mordecai and Esther who risked their lives to protect fellow Jews, there were the schemers who turned betrayal to profit. Indeed, the ubiquitous informer is always with us. In the modern age, they beget like rabbits on aphrodisiac. European and Russian Jews who joined the Bolsheviks and were instrumental in the formation of the Soviet Communist Party until they were duly liquidated. Everywhere we look, we see these broken Jews who have embraced left-wing causes. By the temptation of social prestige, or the fashionable bromides of the zeitgeist, the spirit of this age, that promises peace and understanding with venerable anti-Semitism in a pluralistic New World Order. Their behavior is nothing short of scandalous. Reform and Reconstructionist Jews who profess to have as much or more in common with Muslims and Buddhists. Espousing the fiction of multiculturalism, intellectual and political recreants like Noam Chomsky, Norm Finkelstein, Michael Lerner, Nev Gordon, Joel Benin, Charles Enderlein, Jeremy Benamy, Richard Falk, Richard Goldstone, and the contemptible George Soros. All Jews who labor to abolish the Jewish state or change its character unrecognizably. These individuals and groups comprise a host of Joseph brothers who go about their business selling Israel out, and although they may not know it, are quite plausibly arranging for their own eventual misery. The issue we are broaching is not only whether Israel can survive its obvious enemies both in the Islamic world and in the West, but the crucial issue is whether Israel can survive its own. For Israel may not win if it is constantly maligned and attacked by a swelling fifth column of fellow Jews who bring the same fate upon the nation as it suffered in biblical and Roman times. The Assyrians and the Babylonians and the Romans of yore have not gone away. They have merely transmuted into contemporary forms. Unquote. Great article by David Solway, Can Israel Survive? What Christians should come to understand about national Israel is that this is an unsaved, ungodly people. National Israel is not the true Israel of God. As Paul writes in Romans chapter 9, not all Israel are descended from Israel. Oh, out of Israel will come a saved remnant. But national Israel is, and it has always been, at enmity with God, at war with God. In the book of the Revelation, Jerusalem is described spiritually as Egypt and Sodom. In the coming apocalypse, God will send, in the future, two prophets to speak to Israel, and the people will put them to death, just like they put the Old Testament prophets to death. Revelation 11:8, and their dead bodies, the dead bodies of the prophets, will lie in the streets of the great city, which is mystically called Sodom and Egypt, where also their Lord was crucified. So this is definitely speaking about Jerusalem and Israel being like Sodom. Go online and look at the coverage of the LGBTQ pride parades taking place yearly in Jerusalem. They're huge. Referring to Israel, the prophet Isaiah writes, "Hear the words of the Lord, you rulers of Sodom. Give ear to the instruction of our God, you people of Gomorrah." This is the natural condition of unsaved man. Romans chapter 8. They do not subject themselves to the law of God, neither indeed are they able. They're not regenerated. They're not born again. Ephesians chapter 2, they are by nature children of wrath. No wonder God said about Jerusalem, Jeremiah 32, "Indeed, this city has been a provocation of my anger and my wrath from the day they built it, even to this day, so that it should be removed from before my face." It was never a righteous city. It was never the true Zion of God. The true Zion of God, the true city of God, is a heavenly city populated with a redeemed, born-again citizenship. The protest by the left in Israel is just another reminder of the overall spiritual condition of the unsaved people in this world, even in their religion. There's always this continual apostasy. Jeremiah chapter 8, verse 5. "Why then has this people, Jerusalem, turned away in continual apostasy? They hold fast to deceit. They refuse to return." And again, this doesn't just apply to Israel. Israel is a microcosm of the entire world. So as Solway wrote about leftism in Israel, this week, Victor Davis Hanson put out an article about America's leftism entitled "Our French Revolution." Quote, "We are in a Jacobin revolution of the sort that in 1793 through 94 nearly destroyed France. And things are getting scary. The Democrat Party in America vanished sometime in 2020. It was absorbed by hard left ideologues. They were bent on radically altering or hijacking existing institutions to force radical equality of results agendas that otherwise do not earn majority support." Well, then Hanson goes on to explain the agenda of the left, which we all know about, the bizarre, irrational worship of nature, deficit spending, open borders, racist identity politics, the erasure of gender, abortion on demand. And there's also this revisionism of American history. Quote, "Like the Jacobins in France, names and dates had to be radically transformed. The country collapsed under leftist nihilism." Unquote, Victor Davis Hanson. "And such is the way of all mankind. In the words of C.S. Lewis in Mere Christianity, God made us. invented us as a man invents a machine. A car is made to run on gasoline, and it would not run properly on anything else. Now God designed a human machine to run on himself. He himself is the fuel. Our spirits were designed to burn. Or the food our spirits were designed to feed on. There's no other. That's why it's just no good asking God to make us happy in our own way without bothering about religion. God cannot give us a happiness and peace apart from himself because it's not there. There's no such thing. And this is the key to history. Terrific energy is expended. Civilizations are built up, excellent institutions devised, but each time something goes wrong. Some fatal flaw always brings the selfish and cruel people to the top, and it all slides back into misery and ruin. In fact, the machine conks. It seems to start up all right and run for a few yards, and then it breaks down. They're trying to run on the wrong juice. That is what Satan has done to humans. I love that quote from C.S. Lewis. The world is sliding continually into misery and ruin. In Romans chapter 11, here's a Bible study for this week. The Apostle Paul writes about the Jewish rejection of the Messiah, so that the program of salvation through the Messiah is now given to the Gentiles. And this is a very mysterious work of God where he moves corporately to work with different people and different people groups at different times. I'm not about to try to explain that. But in that text, we get a foreshadowing that the Gentiles, after having received the opportunity of the gospel, will do the exact same thing that the Jews did, become proud and arrogant and spurn their spiritual opportunity, their spiritual heritage. Romans chapter 11, verse 19. You will say then, branches were broken off so that I, a Gentile, might be grafted in. Quite right. They were broken off for their unbelief, but you stand by your faith. Do not be conceited, but fear. For if God did not spare the natural branches, he will not spare you either. Behold then the kindness and severity of God. To those who fell, severity, but to you, God's kindness, if you continue in his kindness, otherwise, you will be cut off. What we see happening in the prophetic book of the Revelation is that in the end of this age, the Gentiles rebel against God and the times of the Gentiles end. And God works briefly again among the Jews to again rescue out of national Israel one more very small remnant. So can Israel survive? Can the world be saved? No, the world is passing away. The world is in a continual apostasy. And the emphasis throughout the New Testament is that our only hope is in the coming kingdom of Christ. And that our job is to be God's ambassadors, God's prophets, saving a people out of this world for Christ. And those people will be the true Israel of God. Isaiah chapter 45, verse 25, in the Lord, all the offspring of Israel will be justified and will glory. But for now, we are in the time of Jacob's troubles, or it can be translated Jacob's distress. This is not just a reference to the apocalypse, but all of Israel's history has been a distress. And why are there troubles? Always because of sin and rebellion. Jeremiah chapter 30, verse 6. Ask now and see if a male can give birth. Why do I see every man with his hand on his loins as a woman in childbirth? And why have all the faces turned pale? Alas, for the day is great. There is none like it. It is a time of Jacob's distress, but he will be saved from it. That is, the true Israel of God will someday be saved from her troubles at the coming of the Lord. Thanks for listening. Subscribe, like, share, leave a comment below, and may Jesus Christ reign.